back to Masters Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, with my co-host, Ben Babin.
What's up, everybody? We're back. We're here. It's December. We're in the last couple episodes of the year. Today is, we're kind of starting to get into the back half a little bit of the Throne of Eldraine season of Magic. There's Alex is going to an event soon. I'm going to an event soon. We've got preview season coming up soon. Mm-hmm. And today we decided a fun thing to do would be to do like a mailbag episode where we take questions from you guys and we answer questions and we have a bunch of topics to talk about.
I was told there would be a dance party. I got prepared for a dance party.
Some like dance fighting, maybe?
Ooh, I'd dance fight people.
Dance fighting? Yeah.
Okay. Step it up.
Cool. Three. Yeah. You're a step up. You're a big step up fan.
I think that the step up franchise is underrated. Let's put it that way.
I've met people like you before.
They're not good in
comparison
sense.
To what? What is it underrated under?
Well, I think people rate them that they're bad and or not worth watching, and I think that they're worth watching, and American treasures.
Okay.
Matthew Monzo says, damn, that pocket square looking fire. Thank you so much. You know what's cool about this? This is a fun thing. Just anybody who's ever bought a suit and been like, oh, a pocket square. This is an old tie. You can take an old tie that you don't want to wear anymore because it's super wide. It was like this wide, like gigantic. And cut it up.
Why would you not want to wear that tie anymore?
It was just like too big. It like didn't work anymore with anything that I liked.
I thought like the wider the better.
Nah, it's just not a style I like. So I cut it up and now it is a pocket square. Ooh. And it even has the bottom of the tie. So if you want to do the whole, but you know, mostly you just squeeze it up and there you go. So learn something new every day.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that piece of information. So as Ben said, today we're talking, doing grab bag. I have a bunch of questions from the weekend, people tweeted at us. Our Patreon submitted some. Ruben will be grabbing some questions from the chat as the episode goes on that he thinks are interesting that we'll ask. Quick shout outs. You can follow us on Twitter. The Twitter things are down below. Marshall, our editor, and will be posting it here as well. Near where my hand is waving. Thanks, big shout out to Ruben Bressler for being the producer on the mic. We are also obviously supported by our Patreon. Please check that out. It's how we keep doing this. It's really, really, really the main driving force of being able to do the new camera and the lights and the microphones and all of that stuff. And Ruben and all that stuff. Schedule wise, this is the live stream. You can catch the live stream at exactly one-ish.
One-ish,
exactly at one-ish every Tuesday. Audio episodes come out on your podcast listening audio sections every Wednesday. Thursday is when the edited version of our video feeds go out. So that has card art and editing and like little graphical elements that make everything just great. And then every Monday we have hot takes. There's a new hot take every Monday. It's a small section of us talking about off subject matters that wouldn't necessarily be a full episode. This last week we talked about if Chaos Warp should be added to Modern. Me and Ben have both started live streaming gameplay. So if you go to twitch.tv/Kesko, you can find me once a week streaming some things. And then Ben is working on getting it done at Ben Bateman Streams.
I think it's Ben Bateman Streaming on Twitch. He's being very generous. I've never streamed, but I'm planning on doing it very soon.
So follow me. Yeah. I'm an affiliate. If you follow me or if you subscribe, you get a little Yoda, baby Yoda soup drinking.
Soup drinking Yoda.
Twitch. It's really good. You guys should get it. It's the best. And the last thing, I'm going to be at Combat Fest DC this weekend. So
you're going?
This weekend. Wow. I leave Thursday. I'll be there Friday, Saturday, Sunday of this week.
That's very cool. And the following weekend, as I said, I will be at Magic Fest Portland playing Standard. So back-to-back weekends, if you guys are going to some big events, you can hang with us. We'll have our decks. I will have two Commander decks with me, just telling you guys that, just so I have them to play in case.
I'm going by
myself, by the way. I'm just going to Portland. I have no plan other than playing in the main event. So come hang out with me. I'm going to like need stuff to do. And if it's like a poor turnout or I play badly, I might just be like a really sad Magic player.
Okay.
Just, yeah, wandering around. So
you'll need hot, like...
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'll need to hang with people. So,
right. So for today's episode, we were answering questions. Chat, get your questions ready. First, we're going to answer some of the things from the Patreon, then Twitter, then you guys and girls. First one is from the Patreon. This is from Andrew Kesslow. That's what it is.
Kesslow.
Good organizational letters in the last name. Do you think there could ever be a viable knight deck in Modern or a tribal, or is tribal just not strong enough for a strategy? Maybe Naya to use Knight of Autumn.
So I think definitely there could be a knight deck in Modern. I think they've pushed the tribe. I think they've pushed the tribe hard enough into several colors. We have support now in all of the different five-color lands between Unclaimed Territory and Cavern of Souls and Ancient Ziggurat, that if you wanted to play like a multicolor, heavy double color, you know, double white, double black, white, like all of those different things to make sure you always hit your drops, you could do it. The knight theme that they pushed this time, right, has like there's like knight equipment. I don't think any of that stuff is probably Modern playable power level enough. And I think the thing that the Knights deck is probably missing the most is that it doesn't have that disruptive element that you have out of like a Humans deck, like a Kitesail Freebooter type of card. But the actual power level, the number of lords, the printing, and I think the thing that pushes Knights in the right direction is that you have a lot of the double strike theme that go along with Knights, which makes the deck a little bit of like a one shot. So like if you come out correctly and you sequence right, you probably can just kill with one attack and like before people are ready to set up to defend.
Sure. I think also, like, you brought up Knight of Autumn, and I also want to bring up Knight of the Reliquary. And, like, I think one of the strengths Knights has in general being a possible tribe that's playable is that it's just one of the ones that just randomly gets thrown on creatures, right? So it could there could easily just be, like, Knight of the Thought Scour, and it's just, like, the Thought Scour is a bad name because that's a card. But, like, basically it, like, does the Kitesail Freebooter
thing right.
for a white and a black. It's a 2-2 white-black Thought Freeboots you. Like, exiles it's a card
like
from
a Scholar
hand.
Kind of a deal.
Yeah,
right.
Scholars.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a Knight Scholar. That could be printed tomorrow.
Totally.
Like, that could be in Theros. And so, like, the fact that Knights is one of those tribes that they're just always going to print new cards for, and they're going to be, some of them are going to be good. Knights easily could be one of those tribes that's powerful enough. And it already has stuff like Nether Reliquary that has all the versatility of land tutoring. It has Knight of Autumn, which is obviously literally a charm.
Right behind you.
Behind me.
Is Knight of Autumn the best knight ever printed, or is Knight of the Reliquary a better card?
I think Knight of the Reliquary is better than Knight of Autumn still.
Okay, they're both. I mean, I think they're both really powerful. Yeah. I mean, I think Knight of the Reliquary is a more powerful card in the sense that, like, there's an infinite combo with it. It actually can, like, set up in a game to take over a game. Mm-hmm. But I think Knight of Autumn is pretty darn close because of the fact that it does something the turn it comes down, and it can be such an impactful card in that turn.
Sure.
So they both are really good. I think, like, the question is, so if it seems like right now you'd be playing like a you know, Sultai Knights deck, that feels like what we're talking about, right? Not Sultai. Yes. No, not Sultai. Sorry. Abzan. Abzan Knights.
Yeah, there you go.
I had a brain fart there for a second.
That's okay. I was letting you get there.
Yeah. it seems like you'd be playing an Abzan Knights deck. It does feel like, when I'm thinking about it, that you'd want to have some kind of tutor that was going to allow you to, like, get the knights you wanted. And that goes against a little bit of the five-color mana base, because those things are supposed to be used to cast spells.
Except that the nice thing about knights, actually, speaking of tutors, is it is a much better tribe with Collected Company than, say, humans is. Because, like, one of the strengths of Collected Company is paying 4 mana to get 6 mana into play. And merfolk, humans, goblins, like, other than spirits, most of these tribes aren't very good at taking advantage of that feature, and knights would be. And I think Abzan doesn't need the Ancient Ziggurat effect either.
No, because the colors are good.
Like, three color is fine, right?
Totally. I think there's, again, if you're comparing knights to humans, the difference there is that playing Noble Hierarch is great because Noble Hierarch's a human. So, like, Noble Hierarch is going to be able to do the job you want it to do as a color fixer, but it's also in your tribe. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you want to play, like, Noble Hierarch or Bird of Paradise in a Knights deck to make sure you fix your lands, like, that's okay, but it doesn't really make any sense. That's, like, not really what the deck wants to do. I think, ultimately, what you're talking about is correct, though, which is that I think the tribe could be pushed. I also think that you don't need 6 power off collect, or 6 casting cost off Collected Company for it to be valuable.
You don't need it, but you want to be able to hit it. It's the reason Merfolk was always bad, right? Like, I'm always just paying 4 mana to draw a card, basically, and put it into play.
Yeah, it's like 4 mana instant speed end of turn to get, like, basically 4 CMC creatures in play.
Right, and versus with Knights, where I, like, getting a Knight of the Reliquary and a Knight of Autumn into play off of a Collected Company is like, how, now you have to win.
Yeah, it's a big game for
deal
sure.
Deal with what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And if I untap, all of my things have protection from colors, so good luck. Getting Knight of the Reliquary Haste is also just like a big game, right? Because by putting it with Collected Company at the end of their turn,
you untap.
They have so much less time to deal with it, and then right. You untap with it. And once Knight of the Reliquary is untapped, it is much more difficult to lose.
Yeah, it gets, like, really, really good if you have that. Right. So the second question we have here is going to be from Nathaniel Brown, NB Norman 89. What cards would you add, remove to Modern? Oh, he's asking, would we want to talk about that on the show?
The answer is, if you go look at our hot take videos, we talk about this a few times. But there's a lot of cool cards that we want to add. Modern Horizons actually did a few of the key ones. We've talked about Force of Will in one of the hot takes. We've talked about Chaos Warp last week.
Chaos Warp, yeah.
It's very easy for us to accidentally just let our hot takes be what card do we want added to Modern. So I imagine that happening more, not less, in the future.
Well, I think here's my question on that. So, like, we talk about specific cards a lot, but the state of Modern right now and what it is a very different place than it was, like, 2 years ago. It's like Modern right now is such a highly competitive format. It's so low to the ground. The power level is so outrageously high. What do you think, like, what is Modern doing right now that is oppressive? What's it doing that's keeping, like, what style of deck is being kept out of Modern by the style of what it is right now, do you think?
I think Modern currently has a similar problem that it always has, which is, like, it's impossible to figure out what the main threat you need to be fighting is in any given, especially as Modern moves away from Pro Tour focus or MC focus, and it looks like it's more of a GP format. GPs are such a wide open field that you're always just going to be benefited by playing the linear strategy,
right?
And having a catch-all answer to things, which is why we talked about Force of Will, is a type of thing that I think the format could use more of now. I mean, honestly, the Urza Oko decks are mid-range, right? That's a mid-range deck. The Grixis Death Shadow decks are a tempo deck. So it's not like those decks don't exist, and they are those are the two best decks in the format. I don't know what it necessarily is missing. I think just, like, cool, powerful synergies that are fun. I think blue getting a cantrip would be nice.
Do you think that, like, would you say that Merfolk and humans, are those fair creature decks in your description of them?
Merfolk is.
Yeah.
For sure. Humans is, sure. I guess, like, the fact that it's, like, Thoughts using its opponent while playing an aggro strategy.
And Elves. Those are all still real decks in Modern.
I think
so.
Elves is a combo deck, but it's a fair combo deck.
So fair creature decks. What about like, traditional mid-range decks, like a Jund and an Abzan? Are they kept out of Modern right now? I mean, Jund is still good.
I don't know if it is, right? Like, when was last... Yeah.
I mean, in the sense that, like, Jund is not... Jund hasn't won, like, a major event in the last, like, month or two.
Sure, but you wouldn't be of a disservice to playing it, because it just has 8 Thought Seizes in the deck.
It's still just, like, a really good set of cards. I'm just trying to imagine. What do you think, Ruben? Anything that comes to mind for you that's, like, a style of deck that you expect? I mean, Control is really good in Modern again.
Right. So there's a couple of thoughts, and I think it ties back into the Knight's idea, which is you have Goblins, which exist and should be a playable archetype. In a format like Modern, but because it's not disruptive like humans, it's not disruptive like a Force of Will deck kind of can be, it's also held back. And so I think that those sort of linear tribal or just generic aggro strategies are being underutilized, because the best aggro deck in the format is Burn, right? Like, sure. Burn is just burn your face. And so everything you have to be doing has to be better than just sending 7 lightning bolts at your face, which is, you know, kind of tough to do in Modern, because there aren't as many, and or aren't as many efficient creatures, I should say. And so I would like to see them try to make knights a thing that you can do, or try to make goblins a thing that you can do. Those tribal strategies have always been really popular, and I'd like to see them try to make them playable in a format like Modern.
So you think that it's what are being kept out are just the like truly fair creature decks.
Yes.
Like not like creature decks that don't have a disruptive element, but that are just pound for pound, I'm playing good things,
right,
and killing you with them.
There was a time in Legacy where Goblin Ringleader was the best card draw engine.
Yeah.
And that was like the heyday of Legacy, in my opinion. I just thought that was just such a great time. Right now you have humans, which is like the fish style strategy that's trying to hit you in pressure points. And you've got elves, which is a combo deck. And that's about it in terms of playable, super playable strategies. Even spirits hasn't been seeing as much play recently.
Right.
So I would like to, I don't know exactly what you need to do in order to make an archetype like zombies playable in Modern.
Yeah. But, I mean, so Brandon S. Russell and Kanyer Doom, who's Jeff Roberts, their comments here on the subject, you know, Brandon says the main thing seems Modern is missing the ability to brew mid-tier powered decks. That seems to be part of why there was so much excitement when Pioneer was announced. And then Jeff says, I think Modern Horizons actually hurt Modern, but it's being vastly overshadowed and not talked about because of the popularity of Pioneer. It does seem like Oko and Urza, the combination of those two cards being printed within 6 months of each other, I mean, after all the War of the Spark stuff, it does seem like the power level in this one particular way of Modern, like, lifted in this way that, like, makes the format less interesting, I guess.
I don't know if it's less interesting. I do think, like, three things have happened, right? We've had three of the most powerful sets maybe of all time printed within 6 months, yeah, between War of the Spark, Modern Horizons, and Eldraine. And you add that to the fact that the third of those sets came out right after the Hogak summer.
I, like, and forgot then, Hogak even existed until right now. It was so quick.
And then into non-modern season, right? No one's really playing it because it's not a PTQ format right now. No one, there's not like a, there's maybe one GP in this entire 3 month period that was modern focused. And so you take that and the Pioneer thing away from it, there's just less games of Modern being played. And so you have a little bit of a situation where, you know, there are decks that are good. Grixis Deck Shadow is back. Like, I think that's like a huge, like, positive sign for Modern.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a deck that I generally am happy is doing well.
I mean, it's fair. It's a fair deck with aggressively costed cards based on synergy. It's not doing something that is inherently unfair, and it's disruptive to the decks that are doing the unfair things.
It's the Delver of Modern, right?
Yeah.
Like, people are always like, oh, I want Delver to be good. I'm like, well, Death Shadow is playing Delver instead of just having a 3-2 that needs sorceries on top of your library. You're playing a one drop that also gets big as the game goes on, or you're playing a one drop that needs you to have cards in your graveyard.
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that, like, having a Force of Will analogous card would be interesting to add, or something that's able to kind of maybe be a little bit more of a blanket control card. But for the most part, I think Modern is actually not in that bad of a position. I do think Oko is just a miserable card to play against.
Yeah. It's really miserable. I agree. Like,
I think the bigger issue I have with it is that, like, 3-mana Teferi, Oko, and Narset are all kind of just misery on cards. And, like, that's more of an issue I have with Magic in Modern or in general this last year than the powerful strategies, right? I don't care that Carrion Feeder has, like, made graveyard decks better. I don't care that Renin 6 has given these cool tools to Jund. Like, the bigger issue is, like, oh, I, like, act like can't play stuff at instant speed, so my cards don't work, or every creature I've ever played is now an elk. and like, anything I do against this card doesn't matter because they have another one.
I think what we're experiencing right now is when, do you remember our friend Big Tone? Mm-hmm. We don't really know Tone anymore, but Tone was, like, a very, like, old school Magic player. He was, liked old Magic, and he loved, like, Ravnica era Magic. And I remember when Planeswalkers were printed, he was like, I'm not going to play these. These are stupid. These are changing it. They're not fair. And it was like, he was wrong, obviously, because they were, like, a really, really good design. And he never caught up. What it feels like actually is happening is that this last year of Planeswalkers is what he was afraid of, as opposed to what they actually were, which is fair cards that were fun to play with. But, like, cards like Oko and 3-mana Teferi and Narset are kind of the problem, which is, like, they're such a low, the investment's so low to play that card. And if you can't deal with it right away, like, you're not going to come back from it. Mm-hmm. That's the issue, is, like, Magic wasn't designed to be able to take those cards out in the first place. They've had to kind of a little bit change the design to be able to accommodate the fact that you have this, like, kind of extra life total resource that just sits on the table. And if you don't deal with it right away, you know, I mean, I remember playing against 5-mana Teferi when it first was printed and thinking it was really annoying to deal with, because if it would come down and the loyalty got high enough, you couldn't deal with it. You couldn't get out of it. It's even worse when you're dealing with Oko, because it costs 3 and it still has, like, a similar effect of, like, this is backbreakingly good. The loyalty is so high. I'm never going to be able to beat you on life. I'm never going to be able to land any good threat. I have to have exactly the right answer for this. And if I don't, none of my cards do anything against you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Next question. What color combination do you think is the weakest in Modern? This is still from Nathaniel Brown. He had a few questions.
Weakest color combination in Modern?
Mm-hmm. It was blue-green. When we were doing our, like, definitely top was, 10 yeah. that we eventually paused out, because, like, by the time we were getting to some colors, older colors were now much better. Blue-green was by far the worst. I think now it's
red-white?
Well, red-white's burn, if we're counting that.
Kind of. I mean, like,
Boros, Charm, and Soul Ring.
And Helix?
And Lightning Helix.
I mean, I was going to say, like, he has Helix and Boros Charm, right. But, like,
but it's not a Boros deck.
That's it. And I mean, also, like Helix is a lot less good of a card in Modern than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot less good. Like, spending 2 mana to deal 3, like, you trade your Lightning Helix to get half of my Oko loyalty when I land it makes me feel so bad for you. You know, like, that. I think red white's pretty weak. Green red is pretty weak.
Yeah,
there's not much in green red.
Green red and black red individually are pretty weak, but when you combine them together and you get Jund, then you're okay.
Black red, but black red
and red green have Ren and Six and Colgan's Command. I feel like that's two big things to hang.
Black red, black red's got Dreadbore. It's got Terminate. It's got Colgan's Command. It's got
I'm not worried about black red. I think I agree with red white. I don't know after those first two. I wish Boros Reckoner was a card.
Yeah, and I mean you have some planeswalkers that are cool. Obviously Nahiri is like the one that comes to mind as like,
and Johnny, those are the two main red white ones, right?
Yeah. Nahiri's been
Quietly.
Yeah, I mean Nahiri is the one that comes to mind that's been a part of power decks over the years. Mm-hmm. But it definitely feels like because Lightning Helix is so much less of an impactful card and Boros Charm is really only played in one deck, there's just nothing in red-white.
Well, and Jeskai decks have moved kind of towards blue-white versus blue-white-red. Like, that's... In modern history, red-white wouldn't have been this position because you had Jeskai and you had Burn. Now we just kind of have Burn.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, okay, I agree with that. Next question. This is from Roy at Run Thundersnow. Long while ago, they made a modern event deck. What are the chances of a second one coming out? How about a Pioneer event deck once the format settles and we don't have to ban every few for many months? With the banning conversation, I think that's they said they were going to do this. I think there's like a weird distaste towards so many bannings happening, and I think part of the issue is that Standard has needed bannings in the middle and of this whole period, but Pioneer was always supposed to have a banning every week. Like, that was kind of the intent and goal with the format. Now, my general understanding is that the modern event deck was not successful. Now, at the same time, the Standard Challenger decks have been super successful. So you kind of want to look at those two things and see where does Pioneer or Modern end up with. We did a whole episode and about
Challenger decks?
Challenger decks. We brewed four Challenger decks that we set a specific price point that you had to keep all the cards inside of under which four strategy we would go with. And I think my favorite to this day is still the Titan Shift deck, because between Scape Shift being printed in M19 and Primeval Titan just being reprinted whenever they feel like it,
yep,
you have two cards that like are the high end part of that deck being relatively cheap. And there's so many, you don't need fetch lands. Like, the shock lands and the cycle lands and the battle lands are all the main key lands of that deck, because you need the forest and mountain feature, and everything else is like a common mana ramp spell.
Yeah.
So, like, I think you could get pretty far with that deck and still keep the price point under $50 as far as like the actual value of the cards printed. And normally they like to go a little bit above that, I think, in these.
I want to figure out like what are the top 10 most expensive cards people are playing in Pioneer right now? Because like, that's the real question, is when you talk about these decks, like if we were talking about Modern at any point in time during the course of the format, and I'm not talking about like newer cards, like the last year of it where everything are these Planeswalkers, but historically in Modern, any of the top tier decks would require around $100 card that you would need four copies of at the bare minimum. Like, bare minimum, it was four Mox Opal, or was four Snapcaster Mage, or was four Liliana, or something like that. So, like, building any of the top tier Modern decks for years was anywhere between like $900 and $2,400. Sure. I can't imagine Pioneer's that much cheaper, because Standard usually exists between $200 and $600. Like, sure. Right? So you got to figure Pioneer is probably $500 to $1,000 for the top tier decks.
Like, right now is a weird moment. He did mention the constant bannings. Like, those bannings are artificially deflating the cost of Pioneer, because no one's investing yet into the format at the same level that they would have if they felt that there was like a 6 month period where they could play their deck.
So I'm looking here. So like the Simic Nexus, the price on Goldfish is $430. Jeskai Control is $500. Human Weenies is $106. That makes sense. It's kind of an aggro deck. So okay, so let's click on that, because if that's the third listed deck in Pioneer, so they're not going to sell $106 event deck.
Well, so the modern one that happened was $80, right? Or okay, it was like $70 to $80.
Is that
depending.
Right? Yeah. I remember you got a Marsh Flats in there.
You got a Marsh Flats, Stoneforge Mists. You didn't get Stoneforge Mystics, sorry. You got Marsh Flats and a few other things, but it was like Sorin's. I think the problem with the deck at the time was that Black-White Tokens has never really been a real deck in modern. Like, it's never really crossed the threshold of being a tier one deck. So,
yeah,
like, focusing on that as the deck that they were supporting and the card value not being that wonderful was a mistake. If they were to do it now and they focus on something that, like, had a little bit more longevity in the format,
That's why I'd be worried about doing a Pioneer one tomorrow.
Yeah, you need those bannings to shake things out. I mean, the Gideon Alive Zendikar, two copies of that in the sideboard, jack up the price of this deck by $70. This deck is like you can buy this deck for like $45 without the Gideons. So that works.
And you could put there are other planeswalkers that you can put in that spot or other like cards and just like that. The point of those decks have always been to like you need to upgrade this still, but they need to be more playable out of the gate than the modern event deck was. But the Challenger decks are a good example of them doing it. Remember, like they printed 4-mana Chandra into that deck when she was like a $50 card.
Yeah.
They're just like, here, she's no longer a $50 card. So they could do that. It just you want to be targeted with which cards you pick to do that with. And that's why I like Titan Shift or I forget what the other good one that we came up with was. But there's a few easy strategies to do it with.
It wasn't like a Maze's End deck or something.
No. They were all four established decks. Like, okay, we picked, like, I want to say one of them might have been just a blue-white control deck because like you could get away with 5-mana Teferis and 3-mana Teferis. Now I'm saying this is true. Like, the like fairy man lands instead of the what I called man lands. Like there's things you could do to make it a little bit cheaper and then just like good counter magic. I don't know. It'll be interesting.
So the five most expensive cards in Pioneer as of this recording are Liliana the Last Hope, Ugin the Spirit Dragon, Oko Thief of Crowns, Jace Vryn's Prodigy, and Thoughtseize.
Okay.
Liliana, for reference, the Last Hope, is the 12th most expensive card in Modern.
That's fair.
Okay.
With a bunch of the lands ahead of it. 3 fetch lands and Cavern of Souls, among others.
Yeah, fetch lands being a thing in Modern were always kind of a limitation, which is why I think we were pretty actively looking for decks that were not fetch focused.
I didn't realize the Thoughtseize had gone up to around $30 again. $30 to $40 a copy.
It's the most important card. It's the Force of Will of Pioneer, as it is in Modern.
Interesting.
Toman Joe, why isn't the Hearthstone card Divine Favorite? Draw cards equal to your opponent's hand for 3, a white magic card.
Okay, got you for the disparity, so to catch you back up in white.
Yeah, it's kind of the idea is to catch you up in white.
So it's like sort of a little bit in the survival cache mode sort of a thing.
Yeah.
But probably better because survival cache has never been quite good enough. Or it's the other one we were just talking about, not even the odds. What the heck is the name of that card? Route, the 3/1/1s and gain life.
Oh, timely reinforcements.
Timely reinforcements.
Yeah, timely reinforcements for your hand. Yeah, that seems to track.
I think one of the reasons is it's a little bit of a combo piece for white in a way they might not want. Like, imagine a deck like Lantern having that available to them. Lantern wants no cards in hand, but like a deck like Affinity, right? Where you just like, I drop my hand and I draw 7 cards and I drop my hand and I draw 7 cards. Like, right? Like, you don't want white to be able to combo in that way. What I could imagine existing is if your opponent has more cards in hand, then you draw 2 cards for 3, right? Like Divination, it cantrips for 3 normally, or draw 2 cards instead if your opponent has more cards in hand than you. That's more of a card I can imagine being
so it's
printed.
Like white having to work harder to draw cards than blue because it's white, but like in a like bringing order and balance sort of way that white is familiar with.
Like I don't think white can have a better card than blue, and so Divination being the baseline draw spell.
Yeah.
The white having a worse version of that, but for white, which could use it, could be important.
That's fair. Next question is by Joshua Armstrong at J_Strong77 on Twitter. How would you design 1-mana planeswalker removal? That's a really interesting question, and that's a question that I've actually thought a lot about since the introduction of all these powerful 3-mana planeswalkers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, classically, the original Planeswalker destruction spell that was good was Dreadbore. That was like the card that was printed that was like, okay, for 2-mana at sorcery speed, I can destroy a Planeswalker, bar none.
Was Dreadbore before Hero's Downfall?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So it was Dreadbore wasn't the first card to say destroy Planeswalker.
I believe it was. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Street target creature, Planeswalker. So if Dreadbore is the original template, the idea then being, of course, that if most good planeswalkers are going to cost 4, sometimes 5, because at that time there wasn't many 3-mana planeswalkers that were any good, you were going to get the value of 2 versus 4, but they've already gotten their, you know, lame minus version on their 4-mana planeswalker, so that's the trade. So if you're going to be able to destroy a planeswalker for 1-mana, what's the drawback? What's the color?
I want it to be... I mean, we brought this up a few weeks back, but it's my current favorite idea is 1 white flash... artifact, Pithing Needle. Pithing Needle. So you cast Oko, and I can in response cast Pithing Needle
landed into play naming Oko.
Before you ever activate it.
Before Oko comes into play. Because I think the key to me and one of the issues that we have with the Planeswalkers right now is if it's not proactive in some way, you're always going to get an activation. So,
and at 3 CMC, getting an activation is so much more significant than 4 because even if it's like less powerful than the one you'd get off a minus on a 4, you're only spending 3. So even if you're only getting a little tiny bit of incremental value, they're getting a card out of your hand and a little bit of value.
Right. Even if they remove it, you're almost getting 3 mana, draw a card, target opponent discards a card.
Yeah.
Or fog. and so that's such a powerful move that being able to do something at instant speed, the Pithing Needle option, I think, is my current favorite.
And it also makes it colorless, so every color look can do it?
No, I'm saying make it one white.
Oh, a white color, cost artifact.
White, flash, artifact, Pithing Needle.
Michael Grothy, Duddard. Dudard, he's upstairs. Just asked us, what's our thought on Price of Betrayal?
Co-host. He's like, his name is right here.
He's on the chat. You can see his face. He's got sunglasses on.
Should we just have him come down and shout this out?
Price of Betrayal is an interesting card. I remember when they printed this and thinking about it, and obviously they had to print this because I believe this card was printed in War of the Spark, and the premise of this was that you had Planeswalkers in every pack, so you needed this at Uncommon for Limited, right?
Yep.
And it's 1 black, remove up to 5 counters from target artifact, creature, or Planeswalker, right? So that
I think it should just be all
remove all counters.
Yeah,
from target
Why
artifact,
is that too good?
Creature, or planeswalker. Well, because it makes Chronozoa far too good. No, it's because
it's really good, especially because it can't target lands, right? Like Vampire Hexmage is a 2-drop creature versus a sorcery, and it costs 2 black mana. So you remove the creature part. I don't know if that card even really sees play, but I think it could easily just be remove all permanent, all counters from permanent.
One of the things that was holding Fry back from being a effective answer to Oko is that Oko immediately ticks up to 6. This does exactly the same thing. It removes 5 counters in a similar way. If it removed all of the counters and was an effective answer to a resolved Karn Liberated or a resolved Oko, then it'd be a whole different story.
Yeah, that's a fair point. It's just, I think this is just one of those examples of them just missing a little bit how annoying the high loyalty Planeswalkers are going
to
be.
Well, I think also that card is probably too good at the position it needed to be for War of the Spark Limited, right? Like, I don't know if I wanted that card to be this, but I think they should print 1 black mana, remove all counters from target creature, artifact, or enchantment.
Do you feel like black is the color? I mean, obviously with Hero's Downfall and Hero's Demise and all that, black has been the color classically that's able to... And what's the black, the Elder Spell? That's like the color that has so far gotten the Rekka Planeswalker for low cost. Is there another color that should have it? You said white. You like it in white.
I think right now white, green, and black are the three. And it's weird, right? Because red is weirdly good at killing Planeswalkers, but sometimes terrible at it.
And these new ones, like, really bad at it.
Yeah. And then green can destroy any permanent, right? It's just expensive to do it.
Yep.
White can destroy every permanent.
And blue can counter them.
But it exiles it and puts it into a weird house. And then blue can counter them. I think that all of them have different answers to them. But blue being the only one that can proactively get rid of walkers, and black, I think, is the mistake. And giving white the ability to do it ahead of time, which is the Pithing Needle idea, but then also giving black just the ability to, like, wreck a thing. It's in its color pie, right? Vampire Hexmage exists. What's Aether Snap?
Aether's the one that removes all counters. It's
all counters
on 5, though.
It costs 5, but I mean, yeah. I'm not saying that's the card, but I'm saying color pie wise.
Hex Parasites in black. Well, colorless.
I really want like a Kaya that does this too. Like
that's a
Kaya Planeswalker that just like pluses to remove counters from things.
Here's a question for you.
Assassinating.
Yeah. So talking about the color that has the ability to interact. So blue can obviously counter a Planeswalker, it can confiscate a Planeswalker with the older abilities that can, like, you know, steal permanents.
How many permanent types, in addition to Planeswalker, what's the maximum amount that could be on a 1 blue mana counterspell? Like, is 1 blue mana counter target Planeswalker? That seems fine.
Yeah, they can bring right? that. Yeah, because that's just the same as, what's the colorless one? Ceremonious Rejection, it feels like very similar to that.
Right, I mean, 1 blue mana counter target artifact exists, right? So could 1 blue mana target counter target Planeswalker and enchantment be...
I mean, Swansong gets enchantments, instants, and sorceries. Is that correct? And they get a 2/2 flying bird out of it, right? And that's an instant. So, like, you already they get a 2/2. So that's like a kind of a strange card design. It's like always been like a little weird to me, but like that card exists and it's not like dominating. Nobody really plays that card unless they have to.
Well, it's a legacy commander and vintage staple.
I mean, in Modern, I'm talking, like, it doesn't come up very often.
It's because giving someone a 2-2 flyer is too good in that format. Like, yeah. The reason it's good in those other three formats is that a 2-2 flyer is an ignorable threat versus in Modern where it's not as much.
What if it was return target, non-land permanent to its owner's hand, instant speed for one blue, they get a 2-2 flying bird?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I don't know if you'd play it.
Yeah, I mean, like, they get a bird and then they get to replay their planeswalker. I mean, it just depends what you're doing. Like, that, generally speaking, those decks that are going to abuse the tempo side of it can't deal with the fact that they now have a blocker and also an evasive threat.
Sure.
Right? That's the problem with it. Like, I thinking about myself as the guy that plays those decks with Vapor Snag, you having a blocker is the worst thing in the world for me. But I hate that. Especially a flying blocker that can kill my stupid flyer that I'm going to kill you with.
Like, bouncing a planeswalker, I think, to me, just doesn't seem ever worth it. Like, especially if they've ever minused that walker, that card is now just worthless. Because, like, them being able to minus twice is an insane, like, sure, I would love to replay this and, like, destroy another one of your creatures for free. Could it, what about blue, one blue, or two, maybe this probably would have to be two blue mana, but some amount of blue mana, artifact or enchantment or whatever, enters play flash, copy the activated abilities of planeswalkers your opponents control.
Sure. Okay, so yeah, so it doubles up.
So if Jace brainstorms, I get to brainstorm. Right. If Jace fate seals me, I get to fate seal them. If they Karn my land, I get to Karn their land. Or I get to create a Karn targeted copy of that ability. So, like, you just get everything they get. Worst case scenario, they eat your enchantment, but then you get to eat one of their Karn.
Okay, how about this one? One black, instant. one black, instant. Until end of turn, choose one. Target creature gets -3/-3, or any permanent that enters the battlefield enters with 3 less counters, you lose 3 life. And it has some name like Thrice Fate or something like sure. that. You know what I mean? Like, you lose 3 life, and you either basically ulcerate a creature, or it's a permanent. And so that even means that, like, but you can't do it in response to Gemstone Mine because they're not casting it, so you're not going to be able to, like, wreck their land that comes into play or take the counters off of Vivid Land. Mm-hmm. It's just specifically in reference to artifacts, creatures, things that have counters.
Sure.
You get to do it in response. The thing comes in with 3 less. It's like a black counterspell effectively for countered permanents.
Okay.
I feel like that card works.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of design space. It's just they, like, have never played in that space, and so I'd like to see them do that.
Yeah.
I think it has now become more necessary if they're going to continue printing planeswalkers at the level they're printing them, which yeah. I believe they are, ish. At least for the next 3 months.
Yeah, the big problem is sets. How ubiquitous and relevant a planeswalker is in every game versus the answers that we're trying to come up with them are so specific to just planeswalkers.
Right.
So that if you have a handful of that card and your opponent is just, you know, all goblin guides or whatever, you have to print them in a modal way. You have to print them like a braid, essentially.
Right, yeah, that's why I like the Pithing Needle one, right? Because that effect, I could get someone on their man land,
yeah.
Right? Or their fetch land, even if they're
yeah.
extra slow.
Yeah, I like that.
You can get, like, random other creatures that have activated abilities. Plus, it's relevant. Late game, you know, it kind of does both of what you need. I think there's definitely stuff, and I agree that they need to be cards that are playable outside of my opponent having a planeswalker.
Yeah,
otherwise,
right.
It's, like, the Elder Spell is the best planeswalker removal spell ever printed.
Yeah.
But even with Oko being as dominant as it is in the format, it was unplayable.
It's still, yeah, right.
At Key D Chillion, how do you think Infect is doing in the meta right now?
I think Infect is not that great in the meta right now. There's a couple reasons that it's not that great in the meta right now. I think probably the single biggest has to do with the fact that Teferi 3 mana exists.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really, really hard for Infect to deal with.
Teferi is really bad for Infect. Oko is really bad for Infect. And Death Shadow in general is really bad for Infect.
Yeah.
And so those are, like, 3 of the most prolific strategies in the format. And the other main strategies, if I remember correctly, all involve Lightning Bolt.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's that great. I mean, in fact, though, like, so the general rule in Modern is that if something is cheap enough, if it has a density of things that are, like, low cost enough, they can always swing back, because it's the same reason that Boggles will just incidentally win a GP or a Magic Fest now, because it's so low to the ground, it's so cheap, and it's so redundant that if it gets the right matchups or people just aren't paying attention to it that particular weekend, it can win. In fact, it's not that different from that. If there was a shift in design that made it really difficult for these planeswalkers to be as dominant as they are, that's the moment that somebody shows up with an Infect deck and it wins Magic Fest, because it's like we were just saying a second ago with the double strike with Knights. if somebody's defenses are down for a turn or they play wrong, you just win. You don't have to eke them out. You don't have as many decisions because you don't have as many turns.
Well, I also think Boggles is just in general a deck that is better positioned in no meta games than Infect is. Infect has to like dodge things where Boggles negates people's strategies. I'm blue-white and I'm like, oh, I drew all of my paths and you have an untargetable threat. Or I'm Urza and like I'm not getting to my combo in time and they are negating my Oko because I can't target their Boggle. Even if I did target the threat, like the core Enchantress, the enchantments don't fall off. It's still like a 12-12 that's punching me in the face, regardless of if it's drawing cards every time they cast a spell.
Yeah, next question here. Some guy I met once, at the guy you know on Twitter. Why is Grixis Death Shadow the only viable tempo deck in the competitive modern meta? So I think there's a good couple answers to that question. The first one is Faithless Looting was banned. So you had the ones that were like a little more blue-red based, like your Phoenix, the deck is less good than it used to be. That got eaten out of the format. I think the other reason is there are decks that feel more like tempo decks. They just aren't really characterized as tempo decks because of the nature of Grixis Death Shadow being so similar to classic decks you mentioned, like a Delver deck, right? It does feel like it's the Delver of Modern. You could kind of call Humans a tempo deck in some ways. I mean, Humans does play a lot like a tempo deck. Mm-hmm. Kitesail Freebooter is like the definition of a tempo card. It's pretty low impact. It's not that powerful. It has tribal synergy and it gets a card out of your hand temporarily. So Humans is kind of that deck. And I think then the other answer is people are not being pushed to be as creative in Modern right now. It's
we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that we're on the off season.
Yeah, you're seeing cool decks pop up in Pioneer because that's where people are brewing at the moment. I mean, I have a pretty sweet tempo deck for Pioneer that I brewed. I haven't brewed one for Modern recently, and the Modern one that I think is the most interesting, and I toyed around with this deck. I saw it show up in a 5-0. I was trying to build something similar. It's basically mono blue tempo in Modern. I think that's the, you know, you had it in Standard recently. The card Curious Obsession is a really good card. Spectral Sailor is a really good card. They're very cheap. You have Force of Negation. It exists in Modern. The ability to, you know, chain those cards together to play spells that are sprite. There's so many one drops people are playing. This is all stuff you can do, right? Like, if you land any decent threat and you put a Curious Obsession on it with a little bit of disruption, you'll just win because it doesn't matter what they're trying to do. Urza still costs 4. He still costs 4 mana. Your things cost 1.
I also think there are times where there's just the best version of a thing, yes. Right? Like, yep. Merfolk is not as good because Humans is just doing what Merfolk wants to do better. And, like, you could play Merfolk, but you have to be really playing it because you think the small differences between what it's doing and similar strategies are doing are going to be uniquely benefited in that metagame. With Spirits benefits a lot more in a world where 3-mana Teferi doesn't exist and you being able to play stuff at instant speed is going to be able to tempo out your opponent. Where Grixis Death Shadow is more benefited in a world where Thoughtseize and being proactive with your disruption is going to be important. And getting one drops earlier that are just the beefiest threats you can play in Modern, sorry Tarmogoyf, is going to be benefited. And so like, in the metagame, way things are going, Grixis Death Shadow is just the best one. It doesn't mean that playing these other strategies is necessarily wrong, but if you're going to be honest with yourself and with the deck on why, what strengths does this deck have and why is that something that I should be playing over Grixis Death Shadow? And sometimes it's just there isn't a good reason. Sometimes it's you own those cards, which is totally fine. And the way Modern GPs work, there's so many opponents at those events that metagame is kind of not a thing.
You'll be playing really hot, and then in the fifth round, somebody's playing Cheerios against you, and they've gone 4-0, and you just get comboed out, and you weren't expecting it, you didn't think about it, and right. You're like, how is this deck not the best deck in the format? And you're like, well, because no one ever plays it, and then this guy just happened to do really well, and I just lost.
Right. You know? One of my favorite things, like, the GPLA, I think 3 years ago, was Modern, and I was like super stoked, and I like tested for like months leading up to it, specifically trying to figure out how to create a Tesserator list that was good against the metagame. And I like tested against Jund, and at the time I think Death Shadows was like basically the top 4 decks of that format, and I had a great matchup against all of them. My win percentage was great. Get to the thing, I don't have buys, so I play against Goblins, 8-rack, and then a collected company brew that put 8 Blood Artists into play. And I was like, I don't know how to play. I can't beat any of these decks. Great. Okay. 0-3. I'm going to go play Commander.
The last question we have here that I think we'll answer today. how long till Modern or Pioneer appears on Magic the Gathering Arena? We've talked about this before.
This is from AJ Hewitt.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, and the answer to the question is Modern is never going to appear on Arena. Modern just never will. There's way, 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 way too much history, too many sets, too much weird nuance, design things they don't want to have to mess with. Arena already struggles to just like release on time anyway, from what we understand. Like the team that is there working out the actual IT of that is not as expansive and massive as I think we all imagine it would be. It's a team that releases the product on time. You can't go back that far, right? Like you'd be trying to go back and tool like 11 sets or something, like 11 years of sets. But Pioneer is a possibility. I mean, we know that we already go back to Kaladesh, right?
They've actually, so in Arena, in the code, we have up to Shadows over Innistrad block put into the code. So like they've already done the work up to that set. What Wizards has said is their plan is to get us to Pioneer. They've officially announced on our list to do's is to get all of the sets. Now it's going to be hybridized models. They're going to release like Kaladesh block masters, right?
Yeah,
and they're going to include the top 100 cards that they think are actually relevant from Kaladesh block into Pioneer.
Right.
Kind of the way that they were doing the master sets on Modo. So the way they got to Legacy and Vintage being able to exist on Modo is they released those older cards through Masters Editions. That's where the Masters Editions came from. Modern Masters was based on this model. I remember like drafting an Elephant Tribal Urza's Land deck in Masters 4, I think, on Modo. And that strategy is what they're going to be working towards. And there are downtimes, like right now, right? Like what is Magic Arena releasing as far as new content? This year it's been very format focused. Partially because they launched Pioneer this year. But next year, I would imagine that in November, they will release, or in December, they will release a Shadows over Innistrad Kaladesh block like master set that has the best cards from those sets that they want to be in the format. And then the next year, like every December, will be that release because that's the dead time as far as content release schedules, especially for Arena.
So here's my question. Like, I had this one memory. I worked at a comic book store when I was like 12 years old, and we had like a big, there was like a junk toy section, right? Like in the corner, it was all these old action figures. There was like 3, 4, 5 of them left from each run. And they were all mixed up in this big bin. And I remember walking up to the guy who ran the store and I was like, should I go organize all those? Like organize them to be all. And he said, no, absolutely not. Don't do that. It takes away all the fun. The whole fun is that they're all over there and people can imagine they're going to find something cool and it's kind of weird. And like, you don't know what's over there. I feel the same way about bad cards in Magic sets. If you tell me that there are 300 cards available in a set and you're going to release the best 80, my belief is that the other 220 cards included something really fun that I wanted to do. That's the point of creativity. And I'm not saying that if they get us to 80 cards rather than 0 cards, that's a bad thing. It's a much better thing. The bigger format is more fun. More cards are more fun. But like, if they had made Future Sight Masters, they wouldn't have reprinted Spellwild Oof, and I would have been devastated. I love that card.
Well, like, but those cards don't go away in paper, right? Like Pioneer still gets to play with those cards in paper format, and if someone top eights a GP with a card playing, what was the card you just named that no one's ever
heard of?
Spellwild
Oof. I guarantee Ruben knows exactly what that card is.
It's the Future Sight uncommon, right?
Yeah. Can he quote what the card is? This would be impressive.
Spellwild Oof.
It's an oof.
Pretty sure it's a colorless and a green for a 1/3.
He's crazy.
This is one of the future shifted cards. Yeah. I think that it's spells that your opponents pay to target it cost more.
No, right? Close. It's all spells that target Spellwild Oof cost 2 colors less.
Oh, cost less.
I think Future Set is also a bad set to point at bad old cards, because like every card in that set has like weird nostalgic reasons to be weird.
Yeah.
Like a better example is like the like do 7 damage to target flyer for 2 green in like a random set, or like the random 2/1 first strike with afterlife that no one. That one might get printed. Well, it's already in Arena, you know, random draft commons that are basically just filler in the future and like maybe have a keyword ability on them. I think like that's more what they'd like not look at.
Sure.
And the point of if Ben Bateman goes to a Modern GP and wants to prove that this Pioneer card is worth playing and it isn't on Arena and then does it, they'll add it.
Yeah, I get that. And that's fine. I think I just more mean like there is something organic about the card pool being larger, being exciting to a lot of players. And I think that that's attractive. And one of the reasons that I think a lot of players like to get into brewing formats, Pioneer's a brewing format, right? Like Standard is the format where a limited card pool is the point. You have a limited number of options. So you're being directed by this play, you know, A plays with Bleep, B plays with C. And, you know, 1A, 1B, and 1C were printed last year, so they're supposed to interact with each other. That's clear, right? You know mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. So you're going to use all parts of the Buffalo because, like, they're available to you. It's more fun when you find the weird backwards compatible interaction on some card that no one else saw. And as much as I'd like to believe that someone's going to do it in a physical GP and it'll end up on Pioneer, it is clear that Magic is going in the direction where the digital format is the premier format. So, like, they should be making that stuff available. That is how it should be designed, in my opinion. IMHO, which stands for In My Humble Opinion. I just found that out.
Really?
No.
I actually have a small pet peeve on IMHO, and it like stems from having to learn not to put I think in the front of every sentence in like the eighth grade while writing papers.
Yeah.
Everything you say is your opinion.
Yeah.
Even when you say facts or say stuff like it's facts, it's an opinion. So like it feels like there's like these anime YouTubers that I've watched randomly and always like this is my top 10 list, it's just my opinion, so don't get mad at me. And I'm like, just say the thing,
right?
Stand by your top 8 list of most overpowered anime characters. Like, we all know it's your opinion. It's not like you're like CNN being like, you know, here's some facts.
Thoughts and opinions, not of
the earth is flat and there's a dome above us and that's what the sun is on.
So we are getting
that's shade to all of you flat earthers watching the chat. Make sure to like this episode.
Yeah, we are getting ready to wrap up. I'm just going to read a couple comments from the various chats here because we're streaming on Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube all simultaneously now, which is all what we do.
Go to Twitch. We want to build that Twitch channel. It lets us become an affiliate there if you guys help out, and that way we can have subscribers. You can have cool meme-y emotes of me and Ben doing meme things, or just go subscribe to my channel at Kesco. /Kesco.
Brandon S. Russell asks here. He says, "Ben, talk about your EDH decks." I can do that for a second because I'm going to be at I'll be at Portland and I'm going to have them with me.
Brandon S. Russell, can you reformat that in the form of a question?
Ben, you're fired.
My last name's Trebek. Don't worry about it.
So you guys know about the Sig deck. I've played the Sig deck a bunch now. The problem with the deck is I build it and then I take it apart and then I build it and I take it apart just because like a lot of the cards that are in the deck I end up using in other formats. But I still have the list and I have it there and I can put it back together. I will put it back together for Portland. The other one actually, and this is pretty fun, is my initial EDH deck that I was playing was my Brea deck. And what's happened is that comes from a Highlander Gauntlet deck, like this like weird four-color artifact aggro sort of thing. And I recently added like 6 green cards to the deck because I have so many 5-color lands in the deck. So now it plays Oko and it plays Gilded Goose because they just give me even more artifacts, which is sweet. And I think what I'm going to do with the deck is Brea can't be the commander, obviously, because there's green in the deck now. So I'm going to have to pick a 5-color commander, which is fine. Like, I think, isn't it like a thing that some commander decks, you don't necessarily need the deck to be about the commander. You can just play a good deck.
Sure.
Right? Like, if you have a good 5-color.
Normally, that deck, it ranges, right? Technically, the best 5-color commander to play in that situation is Sliver Queen, right? That's, like, normally, because she just, like, if you have infinite mana, she wins for you, and otherwise she's just generically good. She's also on the reserved list and like way too expensive.
Got it.
A lot of times people play like Trial to Valara because it's just a board wipe that they have access to.
Sure.
You're artifact based, so maybe that Scarecrow is just
Reaper King.
Helps you get that pip on the... But I think you'd play Golo.
Golos, yeah.
Golos
makes...
Guy.
Yeah, that makes... Golos makes a lot of sense.
And traditionally, when you're playing 5-color, like a theme that isn't your commander, traditionally that's Chromat.
Chromat classically is it's the bad apocalypse card that people just like because it's funny.
And a lot of people do 5-color god decks with Corona the False God.
Yeah, or you can do like Progenitus is one that people will just do for fun, right?
It's like if I cast this, I have the thing that'll win in 3 turns.
Especially if there's a land specifically in your deck that interacts well with your artifacts, then Golos is probably where you want
to. I think so. I mean, there's not a ton of lands, but there's at least a couple. I think
I would play a commander that just read Find Academy of Ruins.
So I think what I'll do is I will reformat that deck. I'll get rid of the aggressive early creatures that play well in 1v1, the like 5 or so remaining cards and just replace them with like similarly evasive things that can just be really good with equipment on them. So I still have the artifact count high, and cards like Bloodforge Battle Axe are still good. They're just not going to play like Spine Thopter because like it doesn't make any sense to probably play that card in EDH. And that is what I'm going to do. I'll have those two decks with me, and I'll be able to play some games of Commander. E. Kipper on Twitch asks, do you have any recommendations for a good substitution for olive oil that has fewer calories but achieves the same non-stick effect? There is... What?
Go ahead.
Oh, Ruben's looking.
I was on this one.
You were on this one?
Yeah.
You already responded?
No.
Oh.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, so there are actually some things. If you're looking for the olive oil flavor, that's harder to achieve because...
Wait, what's the question?
E. Kipper on Twitch asks, do you have any recommendations for a good substitution for olive oil that has fewer calories but achieves the same non-stick effect? Oh. So if what you're looking for is the ability to like cook things and keep the calories lower... there are like a bunch of these sprays you can get, like all those, like, I can't believe it's not butter and things like that.
Like canola oil or...
I think he's probably, well, I'm guessing he's asking here to, in a way to cook without oil, because most of those oils are still going to have pretty high caloric content.
Sure, okay.
If you're cooking with oil, you're cooking with oil. If you're looking for something that makes a pan nonstick, there are like a bunch of like zero calorie, I can't believe it's not butter sprays that if you don't care that much and you season with other things, actually make your food taste pretty good. I've known like... when I trained people, when I was younger, when I was doing more modeling stuff like 5-10 years ago, I'd use more of that stuff. Obviously, like olive oil is going to be better for you. It's just a like healthier option. I think the correct option is just use olive oil and don't overdo it. But if you need to and you're looking for like the micro macro count, that's the way to do it.
Well, I will say that expensive olive oils, well, if you're using them to cook, are actually probably a net negative. You want to like the cheaper olive oils are better for cooking. If you're using it for salad or on top of things as a flavory thing where you want the actual flavor of that, like for on bread, then use high quality olive oil. But for cooking, save your money.
Yeah.
The cheap stuff is just as good, if not better, because it doesn't have as many like impurities. So those taste better when you're just drinking olive oil, but they're worse when you're trying to like cook a steak.
Olive oil is legitimately one of the, it's one of the things at the store that if you buy it, the like more high class pretentious presentation of the like vehicle that it comes in, the more delicious I'm convinced it's going to be. So if it comes in some like super artisan like tin from Italy and it's got like it's these crazy garnishes and it's like one I've never recognized, I'm like, oh, that must be really high quality.
I mean, that's true, I think, for me, for everything.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for like real good packaging.
Judging
like
if a book by its cover.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but also like if it's olive oil, like you think The Godfather, you think Italian, you think like, oh, this is from the old country. There's probably some like, you know, like beautiful family with olive skin that's like working on this together and it's a family business and you just, yeah, anyway.
I'm excited for our hot take next week to be our discussion about olive oil.
feels strong.
Alexandro Rosales wants me to hear about any updates to Kess. So the biggest update is that I'm trying to figure out how to fit the adventure card that kills artifacts and the adventure card that buys back creatures into the deck. So like, and there's a third one. What's the, so I already put the knight that kills things. I'm not putting Merfolk 0/4 that mills.
Yeah, there's the flying, the 2/1 flyer.
Oh, the Death Touch one. So the adventure card that has Death Touch when it enters the battlefield. It's just a 1/1 for with Death Touch, but you can pay 3 to draw a card and lose a life. The thing with adventure cards in Kess is you can cast them from your graveyard. So things that let you kind of loop them in ways is something I'm trying to figure out which cards to cut. The problem is I haven't played a lot in the last 2 months of Commander because I've been traveling and everything. So I'm really excited Command Fest DC to get some testing in. One thing I have started doing is kind of removing some of the more like boring infinite combos. So I removed Ral and Expansion Explosion because Ral wasn't really doing anything other than just like, oh, I won. And then also removing some of the tutors because just every tutor I cast would just kind of win me the game.
Right.
And trying to make it a little bit more fun and less consistent. And so like the adventure cards feel really cool. The Death Touch one specifically is the most exciting to me because the deck doesn't have blockers. And so much of the time I get like low on life total because people are like, oh, well, I can't attack Ben. I can't attack Ruben because you guys have like a 3/4 in play or something or whatever. Oh, but Kess doesn't have anything. I'll just swing with my 2/2.
And so the reason that the loop works here, because Hagen Kirk, moderator in the Masters of Modern Facebook group on Facebook, if you guys remember Ben, it's like 6,000 people in there, says, I still think the rulings about recasting adventure cards is just stupid. It is a weird ruling that like so you cast the adventure spell, you cast the creature, then the creature dies, you play it from your graveyard, you recast it, and now it's the second time it's not exiled in that way.
Anything that lets you cast cards from your graveyard as if they were your hand can cast the adventure half. Tess has the specification that it has to be instant sorcery, but doesn't care until it's on the stack. The reason stuff like Snapcaster Mage or even what's the surveil one?
Yeah. Mission briefing.
Mission briefing is because it can't affect a non-instant or sorcery card as a target because it's not an instant sorcery card when you target it.
Gotcha.
And so Snapcaster Mage has extra loops to that problem, but because Kess lets you just choose a card and cast it once a turn, it lets you cast the adventure half. Gotcha. Same as like the same reason you can cast adventure with a Yawgmoth's will.
Will, right.
I almost said bargain. Can't do that. I guess you eventually draw into the adventure card that you can then cast from the top of your deck. I think I love it. I know it pisses people off, and like I expect to get a lot of shade this weekend at Command Fest DC for like looping the Death Toucher, but the fact it does a lot of what the deck wants to do, and it's kind of a expensive but consistent card draw engine, and I'm excited to pull it off.
Are you staying at a Marriott property?
I am staying at the Courtyard Marriott.
Courtyard Marriott. Yeah. Awesome.
Also, my social security number is. Yeah. If anyone wants to hunt me down in DC.
All right, guys. I think that's going to wrap up what we're doing here. That's going to wrap up the episode. So thanks to Ruben for sitting in for engineering, for almost correctly pulling Spellwild Oof. I was impressed.
So close.
And thanks for everybody for asking questions here. Happy holidays, guys. We have, I think, one more episode before the Christmas week, and then one episode with our preview card that will be closer to the end of the year. So get hyped. Say hi to Alex next weekend. This weekend, say
Command
hi to me.
Command Fest DC, going back to where I went to school. Yeah. That was the land of my undergraduate.
Say hi to me next weekend in Portland. I will be playing Standard. Hit me up on Twitter at Ben Bateman Media if you guys want to know what I'm thinking about playing. I definitely have some ideas. And
make sure to follow my Twitch at twitch.tv/Kesko. Make sure to check out Supreme Verdict. Tonight, I'll be playing for the Cup Championship rounds. I'm going to be sick. The subject matter is subject matters I know nothing about. John Dunning hosts it. I am playing against Jason Ault and Cat Light, and I'm going to lose. Jason Ault's 3-0. The subject matter is in his favor. I don't know if I can talk about the subject matter, so I'm not. Okay. But it's like a thing that I don't really participate
in. You're
going
to have to do some hard work.
And I may actually be allergic to and Pioneer.
Oh.
And versus Jason Ault, who's
you
on
love arguing,
podcast
so you're gonna
called
be, you're
Brainstorm
gonna be good
Brewery.
At yeah. Okay.
Hopefully that's enough hints on the subject matter.
and also follow along with Ruben at MoxRuby on Twitter. But we'll be back same time, same place next week with another live episode. Thanks for watching, guys. See y'all soon.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.